We're back on Canuck Central. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? Visit kintec.net. As we sit here in the Kintec studio, we're watching Sats Lakers get romped.
Well, I mean, they're only
early
down.
On by Wembanyama's Spurs.
They're down 11.
Yeah.
Insurmountable.
11's like three sets. It's like three possessions in the NBA now.
In today's NBA, that's nothing. I wonder if, like, because now all the NBA teams have, like, the floor with color, like, that matches their team color.
Yeah, they had that during, like, the in-cup tournament, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's what they have right now, too, is the in-cup.
Do you ever think they changed the color of the ice in hockey?
No. You kind of need it to be white, don't you?
Yeah.
Unless you change the color of the puck.
Mm. So the Kalamazoo Wings.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
They have different color nights. Like for Pride Night, they actually have like rainbow ice. And cool. I know they had orange ice earlier this
year
I saw
for
something
that.
Too. It's not a good, like it doesn't look good.
No, I mean, it's not even about being a purist. I need to see the puck.
Yeah. And
it's simple for me. I just want to be able to see the puck.
They can never get the ice like saturated enough, I guess,
yeah.
to be.
Yeah.
It just looks like foggy orange.
But that's the level to do that. You know, novelty, you're getting people into the building, you're trying to do nights, right? It's kind of like minor league baseball, some of the crazy quirky things they do.
Star Wars night and all that.
Yeah, which is fine. I mean, but yeah, never in the NHL.
I don't know why. I cannot get used to these like floors. I don't know. It bothers me.
It reminds me of some of the floors you see in college basketball too.
Yeah.
So, but I know what you mean. I like it
it's
though.
Like, what is it? The Boise State field in NCAA,
the blue
field. I don't know why. It's just like it always looks strange.
It does look very strange. I don't disagree. But at least you know when you're watching the game, you know it's an NBA Cup game and not an NBA regular season game.
Fair enough. Your Lakers, big NBA Cup.
They won the inaugural cup.
Trying to defend it.
Yeah, they've won the inaugural cup.
All right, let's get to the mailbag. We've got Arash and, of course, producer Josh Elliott Wolf behind the glass.
We'll start with this one.
Mm-hmm.
From Blue Sky, Brad on Blue Sky. Should the Canucks be staying in a hotel on the eve of home games?
A lot of teams do this.
Yeah, said somebody else texted in and said, how about they check into a hotel and stay away from their bedroom? I don't know what people are insinuating, but I mean...
I know a lot of teams do this. I know Sean Payton is a big proponent of having his team stay in a hotel the night before a game, even in New Orleans.
Yeah.
It's also different in football, though, right?
Yeah. Toronto FC used to do this for a lot of their big matches when I covered the team.
Yeah, well, they used to do it in the playoffs too.
Yeah,
in hockey, I don't know, some teams still do it. I think as they get later in rounds, they'll do it.
Yeah. So I don't know. Too many distractions at home.
I mean, in reality, there's only so much you can do in a day.
Yeah.
Right. Like, there's only so much physical and mental. Exertion you can do until you get to a point where like you don't have it.
Yeah.
So there is a level of like, you know, when you are home, you know, as much as you want to spend time, you should spend time with your family. But the reality is, as a professional athlete, a lot of it has to also be gearing down, getting your rest, and not using too much energy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a fine balance. I'm not sure this is at fault specifically because they were good at home last year, you know, but. You know, again, when you play that as poorly as they have at home ice recently, like, fair questions.
Saturday is the only time I will ever say this. They should just play Chelsea Dagger on Saturday.
Just pretend like it's a Hawks home game.
Just madhouse on at Rogers Arena.
That would be. They have played Chelsea Dagger once at Rogers Arena. It did not go over well.
No, it was like it was almost like a. Like we had like a State of the Union over it.
The in-house DJ almost got canceled.
Yeah, it was a tough break.
Yeah.
Justin and East Van, how should the Canucks plan Kevin Lankinen's load management moving forward?
Treat him as your number one goalie.
Yeah. You're going to split this weekend.
Yeah.
Then you've got Tuesday against the Rangers. And you don't play again until next Saturday. So you got a few days off between now and your little Eastern road swing. But, you know, there's another back-to-back before the end of November. So that's, like, ultimately this question comes down to how much further away is Thatcher Demko?
Yeah, I mean, Lankinen...
And that we still don't really quite know yet.
Yeah, and listen, I know they haven't played back-to-backs, and they've even had a couple of days between games on a couple of occasions here, and Lankinen has had some days off, but still, he's an NHL goalie who has played six straight games.
Yeah.
And he's a guy who hasn't really done these things in the past, and that's not easy to do no matter what, right? So I'm glad, he's getting the split. Maybe it's even Chicago that Lankinen gets off, and he gets Nashville or whatever. But until the schedule forces you, I don't think you change much. You're right. You have back-to-backs. You're forced to do it. You have another back-to-back coming up a bit later this month. You have 3 and 4. You have 4 games in a week. Yeah, you need to kind of get your backup involved. But when you have spaced-out games, like, I'm not too worried about it. Like, I'm really not worried about the Lankinen start so far because I don't feel that they've overplayed him. And I don't think the schedule has been onerous enough for us to be concerned about, him playing too many games. Like, if they had played him 3 out of 4 or...
Yeah.
If they had a tougher schedule with tougher travel, I would be inclined to say, okay.
Yeah.
But really, they haven't had that.
Well, and also on top of the usage worry is more like a season-long thing.
Yes.
It's do you want your guy playing 60 games and then having to go into the playoffs already tired? Probably, that's more of the question mark, whereas right now you're still in a spot that... once Demko's back, you're not expecting Lankinen's load to be so heavy. So, it's not a season-long worry right now because you're not expecting this to last for much more of an extended period of time for Kevin Lankinen.
Yeah, I mean, the Canucks have played the fewest games in the NHL this season. They're a number of team. I think there's 7-8 teams or something that have played 15 games.
Yeah.
But that's the fewest amount of games so far in the league. And there are teams that have played 20 and 18 games so far.
Yeah, it's been a very light schedule so far for the Canucks.
Next one from Todd Naslin. Should sitting Carson Soucy be an option now? He seems to need a reset.
Well, he did get, I guess, a little bit of... I shouldn't call it benching, but his usage did change last night, right? Like, he wasn't being used on the penalty kill. We saw a little bit more Quinn Hughes and the three righties on the PK, and Carson Soucy had his role diminished that way. I mean, right now, you don't have a... if you're pulling Carson Soucy out of the lineup, who's going in? Bringing somebody up from Abbotsford to play those minutes?
Unless you want to have two righties.
Yeah. The line
is DPD ready to go?
Yeah. The thing about this is Elliot always says this, Elliot Friedman, SportsCenter Insider. The guys in the room know who the best players are, right? And sure, sometimes they can understand a disciplinary benching of some kind, but you're not going to convince too many people that bringing somebody up from Abbotsford to play for Carson Soucy is going to be the better move for the team.
Yeah.
It might work for a game, but it's not living in reality. So
no, and you just don't have the options. And that's why even when looking at
maybe if Forbert came back.
So
but,
what's more important, you rectifying things or sending a message that could cost you a game?
Yeah.
Where are you at? Right? Because you could do that. You could do something drastic and, cut your nose off to spite your face to send a message to say, hey, I'm willing to lose playing the right way than win not playing the right way. I don't think you're kind of at that stand yet. You know what I mean? And the players, I don't think, would respect it. Be like, wait, we're not playing this guy. I know he struggled, but we're going to do this instead. We're not going to be any better doing this.
No.
And up front, too, it's like, I don't think Pedersen's been bad enough the last few games to be like, he needs to come out. You know what I mean? And JT, I think, has been done enough good things all year that you don't take him out of the lineup, right? So if you're not doing that, you want to take Myers out? Sure, I guess, but okay. Does that really send the message you think it's sending? I'm not even sure it does, right? But okay, you want to talk me into it? You want to make that argument? Sure, fine. And then it comes to the wingers here, right? Are you sitting Garland?
No.
Right? Okay.
Maybe Hoglander. Like, that would be the biggest...
Who cares?
No, it's
like,
not...
Is that the move? It's like, oh, horrible game. You know what's going to get us on track is scratching Hoglander. No, right? So the only guy I look at and say... would be DeBrusque, but would you do that to a guy you just signed and has even been that bad? You know what I mean?
Maybe Heinen, but I don't
but
know.
But even
if
him, doesn't matter. I don't know if that moves.
Yeah, it's, like, not, to me, it's not the message you're looking to send.
If you want to talk about sending a message, it has to be a big core contributor. It can't be a guy who's, you know, a role player for you, you know? And if you look at the contributors, like, who are you sitting, you know?
And I'm as fired up as anybody right now for how they've played the last little while, and certainly after last night's game. But... I'm not at that level, like, that, you know, you need to have a core player benched. At the end of the day, you're still 10th in the league in points percentage.
Next one comes from Arpan. Do the Canucks make a move of significance ahead of the holiday roster freeze? I.e., is there a Zadorov type of trade to be made, or are we waiting until closer to the deadline before we see anything?
So... last year they made the Zadorov trade pretty early. It was in November, wasn't it? So, you know, that was a unique circumstance. They moved out Beauvillier and were able to get and jump on Zadorov first when Calgary was really looking to move him. So it was a unique circumstance. Right now, I'm kind of the mindset set that the Canucks want to try or at least be able to add an impact player.
Yeah.
And you're not going to be able to do that until you get closer to the deadline and really open up some meaningful cap space to add that kind of a piece.
Yeah, and you're right. I think if they have their way, they would prefer to wait, get as much cap space as possible, get as high an impact player as possible, and see if they have any room left over to do any other things they need to do to improve their roster. At the same time, you have to be flexible for opportunities when they arise. And if you feel like the best player you're going to get is going to be available next week, you do it.
Yeah.
I'm not certain that's going to happen. I think for all the talk about trades, when you look at every trade that's happened so far, you see teams that had either a dire need, like you don't have enough guys, like Utah got into with their defense, so they went out and got Olimata, right?
Yeah.
You even look at what happened with the Washington Capitals. They've been looking for another center for going back to the spring, even with Backstrom going out and wanted more depth, and they finally made the move. They had LTIR space, right? You saw the San Jose Sharks, again, rebuilding team, ton of cap space. They could go out and get Liljegren. That doesn't mean the market's heating up. Yeah. Every situation is unique, and all those teams had cap space. The contenders don't have space.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they'd be open to doing something now. I'm just not sure it's going to align for them to do anything now.
Next one comes from Chris. What are the odds of moving Vinny Desharnais at some point this season? He's not ready to be more than a 7 or 8 on this team right now, but he's not making 7 or 8 money. Would a team like San Jose or Chicago take a flyer on him?
I don't think so. I don't think that they would take a flyer on him for nothing right now. Like, if they had a lot of injuries, for instance, maybe then they may look at it.
Why did Chicago take on Anthony Beauvillier last year? They had a ton of injuries, and they were like, we need some vets here to help our young guys or give Connor Bedard somebody to play with, potentially.
But he was expiring.
Yeah.
So with Desharnais, you know, you're paying him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, $2 million this year and $2 million next year. I know there's been some signing bonus money in it or whatever that has got paid out. But nonetheless, like, there's another $2 million in the cap next season.
Yeah.
I think you dumping him, I'm not so sure. Could there be a team in enough need that you do the Curtis Lazar, where they moved him and got a pick out of it later on the deadline? I think that's kind of the best. Maybe a low-range pick later on by the deadline, maybe. I think most realistically, if Desharnais gets traded in season, he's part of a bigger deal to acquire a defenseman. Because we've seen in these deals, one or two roster players are included. There's some money that goes the other way. We saw it with the Canucks, of course, when they got Beauvillier back in the Horvat deal. We saw it with Bunting in the Gensel deal. We're seeing it a lot where contracts coming back. And Kuzmenko had another year left on his deal that went to the Calgary Flames. I could see him being part of a deal like that, potentially. But I think all that stuff's a bit too easy and too premature on Desharnais.
Yeah. And ultimately, like, the team didn't sign him. Look, they signed him because they see a higher ceiling, but also they feel like he is a springtime kind of player. And we're nowhere close to the springtime. They're still trying to work with him. They're still trying to develop him, still trying to get him to play at a higher level. And, you know, that doesn't happen in the first 15 games of the season. It's still a work in progress with Vinny Desharnais.
Next one from Mustard Sports. Cup teams ascend towards the finals for multiple years before finally climbing the mountain. We are on year two. Is it really smart to sell the farm when buying prices are the highest while the team does not even look close to being a contender right now?
Well, we'll see what they look like come closer to deadline time. You know, a lot of us expected this team to be among the cup contenders, not a tier one cup contender, but maybe that next tier of teams that could challenge in the Stanley Cup playoffs. I still believe that, because for as much as we've talked about the poor performances on home ice, what was our main takeaway from the Open? A lot of these performances, or lack of performance, is self-inflicted. It's your own issues. It's, to some level, an effort thing. And all of that is very correctable. Yeah, the team is flawed. Show me a team that isn't flawed in the NHL right now. There's a lot of teams that are pretty good. The Winnipeg Jets looked almost unbeatable, but I'm sure they're going to come back down to earth at some point, and we're going to see some flaws in that squad pretty soon. You know, the Canucks, the flaws that they had coming into the season are still apparent today, and I still expect them, as the season progresses, to try and address some of those things. But it's, to answer the question, like, I'm not ready to sell my shares on the idea that the Canucks could be a threat in the Western Conference come playoff time.
We don't know what the ceiling of this team is yet, because we haven't seen enough of their best players play at their best yet. We haven't seen this team play at its best yet. And maybe they don't at any point. And that would be your answer. They're not a contender if you can't find it. But we're early enough in the season. And it's like that Pettersson thing to me. There's nothing you can do here outside of riding it out for now.
Yeah. Like, you know, the way I look at it is, if they don't show improvement over the next, you know, 30 games or whatever that are coming up over December and January in the lead up to the trade deadline, I don't feel like this front office is in the business of fooling itself in thinking that this team, like, well, if they don't show that they're worthy of a big piece addition, I'm not sure that they're going to be willing to spend the assets to add to this roster.
Well, I mean, yes. And the other part of it is, even if they are a contender, I don't think they're spending their assets on a rental.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think they're spending some of their top assets, or I don't know if another first round pick is being moved for a rental again. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think that's happening. I think if they're making that type of move, it's for somebody that they're going to hold on to a bit longer. That's why some of these rental, the defensemen, like, if they want like a first plus for Pettersson, for instance, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know if Vancouver's going to be in on that. And if they are, I wouldn't like it to begin with. But we're too early in the season. And I think one thing that, you know, we always forget, it's an 82 game season is a marathon that has a lot of peaks and valleys. The best teams will look great. The best teams will look bad. Mm-hmm. If this is your bad point and your record's decent and this is what you're working through, it's not so bad, dude, right? So I think we have to also, you know, breathe a little bit and give some time for the season to play out, because there have been so many ups and downs. And we're not at a point yet where the situation is so dire that something has to happen.
Yeah.
It's unacceptable with the home performances like we talked about, and that has to change coming up this weekend. But, you know, as far as making any proclamations about what this team is or isn't, it's too early for that, to be honest.
Think back to last year. Final thought on this. Like, okay, yeah, they spent assets on rentals last year, right? Zadorov was inexpensive for what they had to pay relative to what they ended up getting out of Zadorov last season. Spending the assets they did for Lindholm is the bigger sort of qualm that some of our listeners, our regulars, have, right? Think back to last January when they made that trade around the All-Star break. Demko was playing at a Vezina caliber. Quinn Hughes is the favorite to win the Norris at the time. Elias Pettersson was on a 100-point pace and was just coming off being second star of the month in January. You were sending five players plus your coach to the All-Star game. Brock Besser, JT Miller all went to the All-Star game. Rick Tocchet went to the All-Star game. The Canucks had legitimate reason to feel like they were a legit contender last year as the year continued to progress. Even under the hood, you looked at their underlying numbers. They were progressing in a positive way as the season continued on. And then, you know, you didn't expect Pettersson to fall off a cliff, and you didn't expect Thatcher Demko to get hurt. And that really affected your chances in the playoffs, not so much the moves of Zadorov and Lindholm. You know, I think this, again, this front office is very honest with itself. If the team is showing well, they'll be willing to add to this team. But if they continue on a track like this, I'm not sure you want to be spending big assets to add to this team.
This one from B. Reynolds. Does this team need an enforcer?
No.
Oh, no.
Speaking of enforcers.
Well, I mean, there aren't any enforcers really around anyways. And the enforcers that people talk about, like Rempe and these guys, I mean, they don't even play in any important playoff games. So, I mean, no.
Rempe's no good in the AHL. Yeah. Like, what?
I mean, these guys don't even play. So it's like, okay, could you get a guy that could, like DeLaurier, who could take a regular shift on the fourth line? Sure. I mean, I'm sure. But yeah. I don't think that's the answer. But yes, go on.
Would you like to see somebody beat up Siplikov for a clean hit on Quinn Hughes last night? Maybe.
Probably, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I would like that.
In a game where they try.
Well, yeah, but in a game where there wasn't enough emotion, like
Yeah.
Like, totally.
100% I would have liked to see that. The Besser one was a little bit more nuanced. We'll see what happens the next time they play the LA Kings.
Did you guys hear the interview on the morning show today?
Did we?
Who hasn't heard the interview?
Yeah, it's a great interview.
The
honestly.
Marty McSorley interview from Halford and Brough. If you haven't listened to it yet,
yeah,
please go and listen to it. It's from the 8 o'clock hour.
It's a great interview and a great job by Mike and Jason, I thought, in terms of following up and just, you know, I wouldn't say putting Marty on the spot necessarily. I know some people maybe felt that way, but I thought there were very fair follow-ups, and I think there were questions. I think they did right by Canucks fans and listeners who wanted some answers.
Yep.
Now, you don't have to agree with it, but they wanted questions. They wanted him to be questioned about things. And I don't think Marty's reasonings were good enough for Canucks fans. And yeah. I don't think they logically really add up either, to be honest.
Well, it showed a real lack of remorse for how the situation played out with Donald Brashear now 24 years ago.
I get it. Like, I get the gist of what he meant as far as I was sent out to do a job.
Yeah.
That's what I was as an enforcer. Now I'm being vilified for doing my job. I understand that to some extent, but what he did was vicious and it deserved punishment. And I don't think that punishment was really out of place.
Yeah, you could still be punished for unintended consequences. You didn't mean to whack him over the head with your stick. You whacked him over the head with your stick.
So 100%. I don't
know. And you didn't mean to hurt him as bad as you did. Well, it happened. So I'm not sure what else you need to dispute in this situation.
You're responsible for your stick.
Yes.
At all times.
Yes.
It wasn't a follow through.
Mm.
And the reasoning of I tried to hit him in the shoulder, it doesn't matter. You still hit him in the head. And that whole thing about, well, his head hit the ice.
He was out cold before his head hit the ice.
His head would not have hit the ice if you didn't hit him in the head with a stick.
Yeah.
It's immaterial.
Yeah.
The reason probably it wasn't admissible in court is like, it's like saying you rear-ended somebody and then blaming the steering wheel for doing the damage to the person you hit.
No, the airbag did all the damage. Well,
kind of would have happened if you don't rear-ended you. You know what I mean? Like, you kind of have to. So I don't know. I don't think the reasoning. I get that he probably feels hard done by. I get that he probably feels like he was left out to dry, and I get it. And these guys played hard, and they abide by a certain code and all that. And obviously it was far worse than he intended.
Yep.
You know, like, and we know that with Bertuzzi, same thing, far worse than intended. But you're responsible for your actions, and it's as simple as that.
As simple as that. But if you haven't heard it yet, please go listen to the Marty McSorley interview on Halford and Brough this morning.
Next one from Quinn. What is your favorite Canucks Twitter meme? Not counting the one that's the PDO machine from Soapbox or the Tommy podium one, because that's too easy.
I might be
all over the Sherwood 69 goals.
Anything to do with my water bottle spill.
Oh yeah, those are good too.
Those are pretty good. There's been a couple of good renditions of the water bottles.
The cowbell?
Yes.
Cowbell
the cowbell rendition is pretty good. This is like... I don't know if it's necessarily a Canucks meme, but I really do enjoy the GTA one. The oh geez, here we go again.
Yeah.
Ah shucks, here we go again.
Last night, thinking back to the Boudreaux. And,
yep.
And
yep.
Pre-Boudreaux.
Or yeah. Like when the power play has gone out at times. Over the last, certainly towards the end of last season and the start of this season. Oh, no, here we go again.
Yeah, 100%. And I saw this one here from Rick. Angry Rick texted in and said, you guys say it's too early to make a statement on the Canucks. Well, me specifically, and says, here's a statement from a 50-year fan. Poor performance and past affect your perception in the future. I have seen this movie before, Angry Rick, so... Yeah, so and to Paul and Coquitlam saying drop the McSorley thing, we are answering questions in the mailbag. There was an interview this morning, and we literally answered questions about like it.
Yep.
Sometimes we don't answer the questions you like, but we're answering questions that you guys have. And believe me, we had more questions about Marty McSorley than any other specific thing that came into our text inbox, as well as some of the social media. So that's why we answered the question.
Got a couple more here. Basketball Phil, who will go deeper in the playoffs? The 15-2 Winnipeg Jets or the 13-0 Cleveland Cavaliers? As a noted Jets doubter, I'm going to say the Cavs.
Are the Jets getting past the first round?
That's my thing.
They never do. They're like the Leafs of the West.
Yeah, I don't. The Jets ain't gonna do it.
And the Cavs, like in basketball, generally the regular season is more reflective of what you do in the playoffs.
Yes. Well, yes, kind of.
To an extent.
Yes.
At least to much more of an extent than hockey.
The Cavs do look really good, though.
They do. They do look good.
They got some star talent, so
I'd say the Cavs. I mean. Yeah,
I'm fading the Jets.
Yeah,
so
100%
in order to fade the Jets, I'm forced into taking the Cavs in this conversation.
That's how it goes.
At least the Cavs have won a championship in the century.
Yes,
true. Well, it's like very different teams.
Since we were just talking about, we were talking about the Lakers. LeBron James. I saw a great thought on LeBron. You know, you mentioned the Cavs winning. LeBron won them that. Well, Kyrie was pretty good in that final too. But Father Time is undefeated, but LeBron James has taken him to quadruple overtime. It's pretty great.
Yeah, that's a comment of the week there for sure.
LeBron has been unbelievable. What is it, like a billion straight triple doubles right now?
Yeah, it's like it was three in a row heading into this game here tonight.
And we started the segment with the Lakers down 11. They're now up 7.
That's why 11 is nothing in basketball nowadays. Honestly.
All right, what do we got next?
Next one, Austin and Langley, inspired by that interview on Halford and Brough this morning. What is the most awkward interview you have ever done?
Oh, my gosh.
Awkward interview I've
had
ever
a
done?
Couple. I've had a couple, I would say. Okay, the one that was the most awkward was early on in 650's birth. It was like the first year. On the old show, The Playbook, with myself and John Jang, there was, I think it was the Manny Pacquiao fight or something along those lines. There's something going on. It was a big fight. And we had this former boxer on named Eric Kelly. And this dude just said whatever he wanted. And like a few really, really bad curse words made it to air. And certain things were said. And we had to kind of end interview about 5 minutes in because... Yeah, it was. I mean, he's great. He's very passionate. I love Eric. But when somebody starts saying some really outrageous things and curse words start flying, you're like, I just can't keep doing this.
It's like the kid interviewing Mike Tyson.
Yeah, he just didn't care.
I don't care about legacy. Who cares about legacy? You're dead. Just the way. It's like Will Ferrell in Wedding Crashers. Like, bah, 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 I'm dead. I'm dead. I'm dead. It's just like, dead. Who cares about legacy? You're dead.
And the kid is
who
like,
cares?
I've never thought about that.
It's so good. It's nearly as good as the interview he had with Nathan Downer all those years ago. Honestly,
that's so good. Honestly, we watched it again yesterday. Yeah. You act like a nice guy, but you're really a...
Yeah. legendary. Honestly, one of my favorite interviews... Okay, most awkward was Quinn Hughes at, I think it was Dyson Ice a couple years ago.
Oh, was that the time I was sick? I heard
about
this.
Yeah, you were sick.
I was sick, yeah.
And I tried to make a joke with Quinn, and he just was not having it. And I was just like, it wasn't a good joke either, so I'll take some of the blame myself.
Yeah.
It did not land and whatsoever.
Then, if I remember correctly, you tried to double down in case he was like, hey, maybe he just didn't know it was a joke, and then he was not happy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, you know what? To that, I actually had a bit of an awkward one with Danico 2 weeks ago when you were away. It was just like, you know, we love Ken. I get along with Ken. We talk all the time, and we've had him on the show a lot. But I started the whole thing up. I was like gassing him up. I'm like, hey, Ken, great to have you on again. Good buddy, you know, one of our good friends of the show. So how you been? And he's like, good, thanks. It was like, I built it up so much. Like, hey, here's our pal, Ken Danico. And he just kind of shut it. But he was great the rest of the interview. It was fine, you know. But I know what you mean. Sometimes you kind of set somebody up and it just kind of duds. Mm. It's tough.
The other one wasn't necessarily awkward, but when we had Jim Rutherford on a couple years ago, probably around this time, the Canucks were off to a terrible start. And he just immediately went into crushing Bruce mode, and it was pretty wild. That was Sat and I just both looked at each other like, okay, I guess
we're following up on this. It was great.
It's like, we didn't mean to make this all about Bruce, but it's now all about Bruce.
And then it was like, you know, a week or two later, Jim's like, I'm not doing media anymore.
Patrick Alvin will now be handling interview requests. So, but that one was because it also started like the narrative of like, you know, just can they just let Bruce go now kind of thing.
It's like, clearly you don't want him.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing here? Right. Like, honestly, I thought there was nothing wrong with, I mean, we're going over, you know, old ground here again. We covered this in the past, but there was nothing wrong, I thought, at the time to move on from Bruce Boudreau.
Yeah.
It just dragged on longer than it needed to be, and it got to the point where it made everybody look bad. You know, you kind of did it to yourself by letting it go as long as it did, right? But there was no issues in moving on from Bruce, and I think that kind of got lost throughout the whole thing. He was made to look as like such a victim.
Yeah.
I thought that went way too far too, and he's a great guy. I'm not saying he's not a good dude or anything, but I thought the way it was portrayed, but it's like you kind of let it happen.
Yeah.
You know,
you did it to yourself to a certain extent. All right. So that is the mailbag here on Canucks Central. When we come back, we will wrap up this fine program and send you off for the weekend. A weekend we'll spend a lot of time with you on as the Canucks of Nashville and Chicago coming up Saturday and Sunday. Final segment next on Canucks Central.
Big opinions and good bets. It's the People Show with Bick Nizar. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.